Can you believe it? We are back again. Another week of Asian cult cinema.
This one's really a cult.
Yeah, it is. My name's Mal. With me, as always,
Dr. Morbius.
From Parts Unknown. And this is the podcast, or the radio show, I should say.
Radio podcast show.
Dedicated to the wackiest of wacky Asian cult cinema movies.
Of which there are many.
Yeah. This was your pick this week, Dr. Morbius. What made you pick this one?
Okay, I remember back in like the 70s, you know, the director of this movie, or the dubber of this movie, was really in vogue. He was a famous comedian turned
pedophile.
Movie.
No, turned pariah. No,
pariah, I think, is more the word. But
not
yeah.
Pedophile, sorry. I misspoke. Pariah, yeah.
Pariah, yeah. Yes, it turned a movie maker. And this was actually shown at the Grove Cinema, because it was already like a 10-year-old movie. You know, we're talking about Woody Allen.
Yes.
But and it was like the concept of it was that he basically took a Japanese spy movie and he dubbed it into a...
What was it called? International Man Key of Keys or something?
Key of Keys, yeah. And he dubbed it into a quote-unquote comedy.
Yeah.
And basically, this movie's called What's Up, Tiger Lily.
Yeah, What's Up, Tiger Lily. Now, I wanted to kind of change our format this week, if you're okay with it. I don't want to do a scene for scene on this one. Let's just talk about it and the influences and stuff like around it.
I can actually do a scene for scene but we won't. But
I mean, if you're okay with that, because I don't really think that it's even gonna. This movie, we can talk a little bit about what happens, but it's just a spy movie from Japan.
It's actually, they took two spy movies.
Oh yeah.
Here's the deal, which I read a little bit about this. The producer was Henry Saperstein. Saperstein was a guy who also went to Japan along with AIP and got the rights to Godzilla movies. I think he got the rights to a few, including like Monster Zero or whatever. Paid nothing for them. So he had a hit. So then he decided, well, James Bond's popular now.
Yeah.
There's some Japanese spy movies. Let me bring them over here, do the dub job on them, and we'll make a lot of money.
Because make no mistake, spy movies were the it thing for a long time.
There were tons of them.
And the knockoffs, we've done them on our Slow Robot A Go-Go show, where we did Agent for Harm. And there was one a week. From
usually from Italy, from Europe, including Europe was cranking out Hercules movies, gothic horrors, and spy movies. All that,
because it was instant money,
Just like Asia was 5 years later was cranking out Kung Fu.
Yep, and that's the way it was.
So anyway, they basically bought these movies, dubbed them, and he said, "I'm going to have a hit on my hand. But he showed them to an audience. And the people were laughing at the movies. And he's like, uh-oh, this isn't going to be a big hit. So then he got the idea, well, let me see if... There was a show that I've heard about, but I never saw on TV. I bet you he got the idea from the show. It's called something about Fabulous Flickers or whatever. And Hans Conried was the creator of the show. He took silent movies and he dubbed comedy over
them. That's awesome. That's cool.
So he probably saw that and he goes, hey, maybe I can do this. Apparently, they tried to get Lenny Bruce first to do this movie, but he declined. So then Woody Allen was like was doing really good at the time. He had written What's New Pussycat with Peter Sellers, and that was a hit. So he tapped him. So basically, he got him, and he goes, "Hey, here's a movie. Can you dub it as a comedy?" And Woody Allen got a bunch of his friends, a couple of weeks, brought him into his house. Rewrote the script and took them all into the studio and with a couple of other people and just redubbed this movie.
Boy, imagine if this would have been a Lenny Bruce movie.
This had some dirty jokes in it.
Oh yeah, no, I know.
I was surprised. I was surprised that they had some really for 1966. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Now there was Woody Allen. I mean, one of my friends growing up, his family, and he loved Woody Allen.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of it around. I saw, what's the one with the sex orbs? The
Sleeper.
Sleeper was one we watched all the time. There was a few others.
Bananas.
Like, they were funny.
Ones were funny.
I did think they were funny movies. And I actually have some of his stand-up comedy on vinyl.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, I have some of his. I have a lot of Bill Cosby. Woof.
You know, Lenny Bruce on vinyl?
No, I wish, and like Flip Wilson. I really like comedy, I seek it out and grab it when I can get it. So I knew Woody Allen, he was a funny guy. This movie, I don't know, though.
It is. I picked it because it's a curiosity.
Oh, of course.
And it qualifies for Asian cult cinema. It really does.
And I actually was excited to watch this because if you don't know, for about 9 years, I did a public access show. It was called Dubbed 420, and we used to take movies and cut them into 25 or 28 minute movies. You know, dub them down the scenes. And then we dropped all the sound out and re-scripted them. And ours were kind of a little bit out there. We were a little bit rougher and
As a matter of fact, that's when I first found out about your show, which I only was able to see once over the air, where it was one night I was at home. It was Saturday night. It was like 10.
Before we met, before you knew me.
Before I knew who you were. And I'm watching, and I had a public access channel, and I'm seeing a Hercules movie. I go, what's this? And I go, wow, somebody's dubbing this. And then all of a sudden they say like the F word, and I'm like, huh?
And we were crazy. And every time I...
You were the bad show.
I didn't know that, but I was. Yes. Every time I was describing this to somebody, you'd be like, somebody would say, oh, you mean like What's Up Tiger Lily?
Yeah.
And I had no concept of what this was. I never even heard of this movie.
Yeah.
So all these years later, I'm very thankful that we did get to see it, because the riffing genre has a few distinct like benchmarks. This is one. Obviously, MST kind of made that style famous, which seems to be the one that now has taken root, is most popular with the riff tracks, with the Cinema Titanic. There's a million different people doing that now, you know.
Yeah, heckling. Heckling is the word for right. it. Well, what I used to do in theaters.
Professional
like
heckling. But they were, the MST took that and like kind of re-scripted. They used actual scripts and they had writers and stuff like that.
No, this was an actual script. This movie had writers.
No, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah,
This is the first genre where they drop everything redo it. The second one was actually showing the silhouettes or acknowledging we aren't the people doing the movie. We're just making fun of it, you know. This one takes a lot of work. As a person that did this for 40 some shows, it's hard.
It's
really hard.
There was a TV show called Mad Movies that came out later after this that did the same thing that they were, but it was only a half hour show. So it was more like what you did, where they would actually dub movies. I'm wondering if some of those are on YouTube or not. I'll have to look afterwards, but they did like the same thing. They would condense a movie into a half an hour and they were professional comedians. I think Richard Belzer was involved in it or whatever. But yeah, this is not to mention that these guys, when they did this movie, they actually tried to follow the lip movements of the people. You know
that
what I
is
mean?
That was the hard thing when we wrote it, and the first couple we didn't do it, and then we realized you're standing there and you say a sentence, and then there's still people flopping. It looks really weird, so we started doing that, and that's what makes it hard.
Yeah,
because this is not an easy task to just make words fill this amount as people are talking on screen and make it mean something.
Of course, you did it during the good old days where now you just get your Adobe Premiere and just use the line. Just to say say this line, then you match it right above the clip, and then you can stretch it or shorten it to fit the
slightly.
Exact.
Slightly, I know.
You did it in the good old days.
I often think if I had this setup that we had now.
10 years ago, good old days.
If I had this setup now, even what we do for podcasts, it would be so easy.
Yeah.
We did it. It was so hard. Everything was so hard. We were talking into a tape recorder sometimes, and it was brutal. And now think of the 60s. How hard was it? But
they had professional.
I was going to say guys had all like, stuff
all
at
the
disposal.
Godzillas, all the Italians. That was dubbing. No, they went to New York and they dubbed it in a studio. Yeah. And they had pros that directed it.
Now, what was Woody Allen's most famous thing? Annie. Oh,
Annie
not Annie.
Hall.
Annie Hall. Yeah,
Annie.
The sun will come out tomorrow.
tomorrow. Yeah, that schlock.
Sorry, I meant. I meant Annie Hall.
Annie Hall. You know, it was in the 70s. It was always who's funnier, Woody Allen or Mel Brooks? Well, they both had their moments.
He was the it guy, but then, like I alluded to, then he married. He left his wife. And
he left his wife
and married his
18-year-old
daughter. Or
age, but it was, let's just say,
that's
creepy.
That's taboo.
Major creepy, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, he was like, after Annie Hall and a few other movies. His comedy had gone downhill, and he was trying to become more quote unquote serious. You know,
nah, don't bother.
And he just lost his interest for me, so I didn't care. But these early things are like real slapsticky and goofy,
funny.
So.
All right, let's take a trailer break, we'll be right back.
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Hey man, dig this Rio Gone show for a crazy thriller. It's Monsters A Go-Go. A horror thriller with the go-go beat, live on stage from Hollywood. See the Teenage Frankenstein. See
Help, I need somebody. Help,
the Beatles mystically transformed. C, Hollywood's golden go-go girl, Pat Collins. C, the ethereal materialization of 007 as James Bond. It's the kookiest and the spookiest. It's where the action is. C, Monsters A Go-Go. Terror walks off the stage and into the audience. Free 2-for-1 pass to anyone who can sit through the entire show, and it's all live. This is the only show that gets away with murder. So come early and get a seat. If you're late, we may put you in a coffin. See Monsters A Go-Go. Monsters A Go-Go. Monsters A Go-Go. Monsters A Go-Go.
Now I swear, the next one of you primates even touches me. Yeah!
Enough of that.
Yes.
Now we're back.
Now we're back. I was just saying, yeah, some accents bother you a little bit. I'm not a big fan of the New York accent.
No,
the super accent. Not like slight accenting. You know, everyone has that stuff. I don't know.
It's okay.
Is it?
I don't mind. I don't mind.
You're like, whatever. Forget about it.
Forget about it. Hey, come on. Let's talk about the movie.
Bada boom.
Let's talk about the movie. All right. We got it. Skugach. Yeah.
So
we got this here Woody Allen.
So now we were talking about Woody Allen a little bit off air, and you know,
he
wrote a lot of stuff. He was like the it guy for quite a long time.
Well, he became a big deal. He was on the Tonight Show all the time. Mm-hmm. He had a hit movie. And then,
like Lenny Bruce, what was the guy?
Lenny Bruce was getting arrested.
No, I know. I mean, what was the artist that was like kind of like him? The Campbell Soup guy,
Andy Warhol.
Like, there was some people that are kind of like 70s it icons. 60s, yeah.
60s New York hipster icons.
Hipster icons, and he was one of them. Like, you know, they just kind of. And it was the Greenwich Village. It was that whole. Thing,
all the comedians
you know.
Went.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. And it's almost like...
That's where you went to make it. You went to New York and Greenwich Village where to pay your dues, and if, like, you know, the gods of comedy were favorable upon you, then you become a big star.
Yeah,
get on TV.
Almost think, like, Seattle or Portland is trying to be that now.
Honestly really think that if you had half a talent and you went to New York, it was a lot easier to make it then than it is now. I really do think so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really think so. Almost, in my opinion anyway, now you would just have to be internet savvy. Like, it's just people that are on the internet and kind of really go after it and really do
Twitter
stuff.
Twitter savvy.
Twitter and YouTube and whatever else, whatever's going to be next.
Yeah.
That's who makes it now. It's not people who are pounding the pavement and trying and working, you know.
Exactly, yeah. You got to be like on the social networks in order to get stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So back then,
which is
you
why
know,
I'll always flounder in obscurity.
Well, let's hope not. But if we do, at least we'll be occult heroes.
Famous after our death.
In Germany.
Great.
Anyway, Woody Allen, you know, had talent and you know, he was doing good at the time, so this guy just threw him this movie. He said, here's a challenge for you. So, I mean, basically, this is like a spy movie. It starts off in Japanese.
Yeah.
And you're seeing like a James Bond movie where these guys are shooting and this girl's going to get sawed off in half. And then all of a sudden it cuts to like Woody Allen being interviewed by some announcer. And he goes, so Woody, what is this movie about? And he explains it. He goes, well, I got a Japanese spy movie and I decided to make it a comedy and dub it.
I called up some of my friends and we gave it a work over. And now it's about the search for the right egg salad
or whatever.
Egg salad sandwich recipe. And you're like, Huh.
And what's interesting is I don't know if this was in the original movie or not, but when it cuts to the credits have a lot of nudity in them, but they're kind of, it's getting like, they're getting obscured. Remember like in the credits, there was a topless Asian woman and they get covered
and it says
up.
It says foreign
yeah,
print.
Right. So you've seen a lot of that. And I go, I wonder if that's in the original movie or was this just part of Woody Allen just being like a wise guy?
No, I will say I think it was probably like that because there's a funny thing.
The Japanese spy movies have nudity in them? Because this one obviously
they do, but the Japan notoriously bitmap blurs out their nudity
but
in there.
They bitmap the downstairs. I don't know if they bitmap the upstairs.
No, I don't know.
I'm not sure. I think the downstairs is bad and the upstairs is okay.
It's very strange.
Well, whatever.
And it's almost weirder to see that bitmapping than it is just the nudity.
Digitizing,
yeah. And the actors in this movie are good.
Kumi Mizuno, that's the girl that he picks up at the bar at the beginning. She's been in Godzilla movies. Mia Hama, another girl, was in Godzilla movies too. The guy, the crazy old guy with the snake and the rooster, he was in Latitude Zero. He was Doctor Who in Latitude Zero.
Yeah.
Oh God, the main guy was in a bunch of movies. Yeah, and the thing about this movie was it seems like the original Japanese movie was half a comedy too, because the guy who's playing the spy is just really sleazy. He's like grabbing these women.
So weird, and it was at the time, and it was of. It was almost like, and I know.
And this movie is offensive.
Yeah.
It's stereotypically offensive. Yeah. You know,
and I will. Japanese, especially during these times, the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, they were really good at almost. They would take something and just
steal it.
And then kind of make it theirs a little bit.
But you remember, you don't remember this because before your time, or maybe you do, but back then there was the stigma of when you're buying a stereo or something, when you see Made in Japan, it was like it's inferior.
Yeah, they did a complete 180.
They did a complete 180.
They became like really hyper manufacturing, stringent. And that's when then it became don't buy from Indonesia or China. Japan is where you want to get stuff from because they were so.
Because everybody was laughing at the Godzilla movies. Oh, look at the rubber suits. Oh, look at that. That's made in Japan. You know, Juliet stereos. Oh, that breaks down. Of course, it was made in Japan. And they got the message.
Yeah, and they fixed it.
And they fixed it big time.
That is one thing they do very well is when they do something, they kind of do it. And if they fix something, it's fixed. You know, and that's unlike America, where we kind of we say stuff and don't do anything.
Now it's a disposable culture. Yep. You buy it cheap and you throw it away.
Including people, which is sad.
Including people, yeah, that's right. We'll dispose of you when you're of no good to us.
Yikes!
But you know, that's just the way it is. You know, what comes around. It's like I said, somebody else. It's a double-edged sword. It'll get you in the ass at some point too. Am I allowed to say that word on this show?
I would say yes, but don't.
Okay.
I'm going to leave that one, but, you know.
Don't do it again.
You're on a verbal warning.
Okay, I'm on a verbal warning. Okay. I've been written.
Oh, my God.
That's right. Don't write me up.
I won't. You know.
A verbal warning. Okay. Yeah. I've been there. Anyway, so it starts off with he's going to a bar and he meets Kumi Mizuno and he's like, and then here's the weird part. He meets her and they go to dance and then the producer decided that this movie wasn't long enough, so they got the Loving Spoonful, the band, you know, You Believe in Magic, Summer in the City,
and
they just stuck them in two scenes, which jarring, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because they're not in the movie.
No, they're not in the movie.
They tried to light it a little bit like that, but...
So, like, all of a sudden you get, like, this dance scene, and there's the Loving Spoonful doing a fine song, you know, John Sebastian, great, and then when that song's over with, then they cut to, like, the spy and Kumi's like in the room, and they made this joke that made me laugh actually. Yeah. You know, when she's sitting there, she comes out with her robe on, he's looking at her and she goes, name three presidents.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, Washington,
Roosevelt
and she takes her clothes off and he goes, Winking, and I'm like, oh my God, give me a break.
So stupid.
And then, like, she goes into the shower, and then when she's, like, in the background, like, kind of foggy, something starts shooting into the room, and he starts fighting with this guy, and this guy goes, they're coming after you for something. And then it just gets weird, because then it cuts after that, and there's a breakout, like, there's a breakout in the jail, and he's like in a car outside the jail making out with some woman.
See, that's the thing. this movie
is jarringly weird.
It doesn't follow any, and I don't know. Now the other thing you have to think about,
you edited the hell out of it.
I was going to say, when it must have been, they might have mixed stuff up and changed it. One of the things, you know, with this type of movie, when you're watching it, it almost, and it wasn't from familiarity, it feels odd when there's not that silhouette in the front to say this is a riff.
Well, that's good.
No, I mean, but I mean, like, they're saying things that don't make sense.
It's a different, it really
but
is.
But when
different.
You watch it, you're watching it. If you just follow this as a movie, like you're watching a movie,
no, but
it's really weird.
But see, here's the big difference. This is not the same as MST. It might have influenced it. Because MST leaves...
Well, no, they said...
They leave the talking. They leave the plot line alone. This one screws it up completely.
Right. No, okay. Let's take a break and then we'll come right back and we'll get back into it. Because there was a few things that I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So, we'll be right back.
Hey guys, come check out Two Dimension Comics, the comic book podcast with no direction.
We feature candid roundtable discussions about all things comics, past and present, with a killer soundtrack.
We like to include visuals of everything we talk about on the show. You can find that by going to bunchofdorks.com
and click on the Cyclops!
There are only two things I can't stand in this world. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures, and the Dutch.
Hark, a film of tender love, and the screams of vampire death. Now there's a powerful motion picture that rips at your emotions, The Vampire Lovers. It brings you beautiful love and vampire evil, and it'll drive your mind through 1,000 terror-filled moments. You'll hear whispers of warm desire become shrieks of chilling death. You'll taste the deadly passion of the vampire lovers and become a slave of the damned. You'll discover the sweet embrace and the deadly kiss of blood nymphs who refuse to die. The Vampire Lovers. It's in color, and it had to be rated R. Under 17 must be accompanied by a parent or adult guardian. Don't miss The Vampire Lovers.
That was really good pizza.
Oh, this is the best pizza in a cup ever. This guy's unbelievable. He ran the old cup of pizza guy out of business.
Really?
People come from all over to get this.
Ah, yes, the cup of pizza guy. I mean, people come from all over.
This movie is about the search for the egg salad.
Egg salad.
And that's how stupid the plot is.
And that's that's as light as it goes. We did talk a little bit off air where I was mentioning, like, it was... I would start watching this movie like a movie, and then kind of my brain would forget, and I would... just be watching it, like, hearing what they're saying and thinking it was, like, real, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is a spoof. Because there wasn't a lot of super spoof.
No.
They would go into some dialogue that was, like, dialogue, and you're like, it wasn't... I remember when we wrote ours, and I'm not doing this, I'm not going to be like Troy Aikman, where I'm constantly saying what I did. Ours was continually insane. Like, there was no way you'd ever, like... be relaxed and just start watching it like it was a real TV show.
Cause
they were
attempting to actually try to get you through a plot.
Right.
And be funny at the same time.
And then there was one part where they did a lot of experimental stuff, and they did a lot of jarring stuff, because at one point they did those hand puppets.
Well, what happened was at the end, when like the you see like a line come on the screen, it's almost like the projectionist trying to get the line off the screen, and then it goes off the ball with like two people making out or whatever.
Yeah, and then there's a couple times where Woody Allen kind of comes there, they go, they break away to that office again, and he's not cooperating.
Well, they go, so Woody, this movie's kind of confusing. Would you mind telling us what happened so far? He goes, no. And then it cuts back to the movie.
Which I'm sure that was a big hit in the 60s.
Maybe
because people like had adoration for him, or he was...
Well, no, it's not that much. It's just different. When you think of 1966, think of like, you know, the planet Mars or whatever.
Yeah,
you're in a different planet where all the stuff that you know now and laugh about has never even been thought of. This was completely different. This was almost like an avant-garde movie.
Yeah, wow.
And it might have been treated as, even though AIP put it out, it's almost like an avant-garde movie.
So do you think this is really like cutting edge? Would you call it cutting edge?
I don't know
or
if it was cutting edge. It was, when I saw it in 77, I didn't find it cutting edge, but I was okay. I had already seen mad movies. I had seen people, you know, do stuff like that. But in 1966, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. See, and I was asking honestly. I don't have any rest.
It doesn't
reference
hold,
point.
It doesn't
no.
hold up.
No.
As well as it should.
That was what I was going to ask you next. Edge. You know, like, I don't hear people talk about it as much as something that really did, like, change things, you know. There's some movies that were like, wow, you know.
Because Woody Allen transcended that into more, like, funnier movies, you know. Movies where he actually wrote and were actually funnier. But as far as, like, the idea of doing this, I give him credit for...
Well, it's different.
For coming up with this and actually, like, not only making it, quote-unquote, funny, even at times it was... But actually matching the editing it, matching the dubbing it, making it.
No, a ton of work went into this. This was a real work. This is a labor, you know.
Just think about 1966. That's when Dylan went electric. He was a folk singer before this. It was like, and it was happening in New York. It was before, like, you know, the Beatles were still touring, you know what I mean?
It's a different planet, like you said. Might as well be Mars, because...
Yeah.
It's so different, you know.
Yeah, it was different. So this was a different movie. I'm sure the New York crowd were liking it, as well as, I'm sure it's an AIP movie. It was playing like in...
Because I've never heard of
it. In middle America, I'm sure, too.
Until I was talking about mine, which is early 2000s, my entire life growing up, I never heard of this movie.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So it was never around. It was never, like, even brought up by people. And I watched a lot of movies, so... It was one of those things where it just fell off the radar and just kind of, which most movies do.
Because
most movies fall off and just
Woody
go
Allen
away.
Because Woody
Allen
was by the time you were
doing
watching
other stuff, Sleeper and stuff. Which
you were enjoying his movies, but this one wasn't considered like an important movie for him.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It was considered like a weird movie,
a one off, kind of thing that just happened, and that's
it
cool.
It wasn't
you know?
Part of his like oeuvre, whatever the French call it.
Wow.
It was considered like this
French
bizarre,
fries,
the French bread. So anyway, this whole movie, you meet some other characters, and it's like basically like a spy movie, and they're searching for the egg salad. You have the evil characters. You have a bunch of dumb jokes and sight gags. It works to the extent that you could actually watch it. You're not going to be like
I watched
bored,
it.
And you're not going to be like, but you're not going to be like laughing your butt off.
That's so. I was wondering if I was missing the point because it wasn't side-splittingly funny.
No,
I did laugh a couple times. You know, I mean, it was funny in that, you know, sometimes they would say something and you just started laughing. You know, it was just like, well, that was a really stupid and great and, you know, funny thing. I actually looked to see if I could find the original movie to do that for the next week's Asian Cult Cinema.
Key of Keys.
Yeah, but it's not out there. I mean,
it was been out on DVD. It was put out on DVD with, I think they put out What's Up Tiger Lily on DVD with the additional bonus of having Key
of Keys.
They
do that all the time. Like, I know a lot of MSTs did that too, where they're like, the original's on here and this one.
They did.
And this is one, I don't know if we could get through it. I think we probably could.
I could.
It seems like it's a pretty cool movie, you know.
Key of Keys, yeah, sure.
Because I like spy movies, and of course I like Japan quite a bit.
I can get through this one. Like I said, I scanned it again. I could go through the plot of it. And honestly, the plot is so flimsy and so goofy.
It's just a side
note. It's a side note.
It's a side note to
dubbing and the
sight gagging and stuff like that.
Not to mention, it's not offensive, but it's kind of a put down because at the beginning you see starring, you know, nobody or whatever.
Yeah.
and nowadays when you watch the movies and if you're into Asian cinema or cult cinema, I mean, you know, like Kimi Mizuno, Miyahama, you know,
we know
like
these
that.
Guys. We know
you know
most
who they are
because
you've seen them in other movies, and now with the internet and all the years of writing about these things, now they will actually take these movies seriously.
Yeah.
You know these people and they become favorites of
sometimes
yours.
Too seriously. I don't know.
I'd rather take a crappy movie seriously than take like a new movie seriously. That's how much I hate Hollywood now. I really despise.
Well, I'm not.
Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm not defending one or the other. I live in B movie land, and anyway, so of course I like them. I watch them every. I watch at least three a week. So
exactly. At least
we do a show called Slow Robot A Go Go, so we're watching them. You know.
But this is the oddball in Woody Allen. He wrote What's Up, but What's New Pussycat. He was in Casino Royale, which is a spoof of James Bond movies.
Where was he in that?
He was one of the James Bonds. I saw that in a movie theater. That's We'll have to watch that for the show.
Maybe I'm missing that. Maybe I didn't see that.
No, you never saw the 67. That's an interesting movie. I saw it when I was a kid.
I saw the remake.
You saw the remake.
Oh, okay.
The original's bizarre.
In my brain, I'm like, wait a minute.
We'll watch that one. Because I saw that with my parents, and they were really disappointed because they were expecting a James Bond movie, and it was a spoof of James Bond movie. But that movie had every beautiful European and American star that you could think of the time. And Woody Allen, there was like a bunch of James Bond, and he's one of the James Bonds.
He's being a James Bond. That's really cool.
Him, David Niven, and a bunch of other people are playing James Bond.
Very cool.
It's a weird movie. And
we'll have to check that one out.
I think he may have co-written it.
That's pretty curious. Because from what I understand, Woody Allen did try other things, drama and stuff like that. Like
he did direct drama.
He did quite a few projects.
But I checked out around 78, 79.
He's a bit like Mel Brooks in that I really have admiration for his movies. But at a certain point, I was like, okay.
Aren't most guys like that?
Everyone.
Musicians, too, except maybe the Beatles. They had like two or three records, and then after that, they're just either repeating themselves or not as like interesting.
Like AC/DC, just one, album 13 more times.
Well, that's like...
I'm joking.
They're like a whole different category.
They made that joke. They're like, I get tired of people saying I have 12 albums that sound the same. I have 13 albums that sound the same.
That's because...
whatever. Anyway, I don't care.
They're beyond reproach or whatever. Not that I love them or like them that much, but, you know.
I like them. But again, I like the first three or four of them, and then it's like...
About bands like that is that there's not that much expected of them. You know what I mean?
Show up, do your shtick, and go.
They live up to their expectations.
Yeah,
that's all you need. Riffs and, you know, fire! You know, that stuff. But it's good.
So what do you... Wrapping this kind of thing up, we talked about the movie. We told you all you need to know. It's a spoof. It's a well done movie. What would you suggest, or how would you, would you say watch this? Don't watch this.
I'd say watch it.
Do you,
as a curiosity piece? Yeah. Just watch it. Watch it as a historical, like artifact of like something that I don't think anything was done film wise before this like this. You know, dubbing came around like, I don't know, in the 40s or 50s. But redubbing somebody's movie as a comedy, unless I'm missing something, this was the first of its kind. So
as
an original thing, you know, check it out. You know, you might get some laughs out of it. A lot of huge Jewish humor. I mean, it's funny. The main the Japanese spy, his name is Phil Moskowitz. You know, there's a lot of that humor in it.
Yeah,
you know?
and he does have a very interesting humor.
Yeah,
like but it's funny. Like, you know, and a lot of the stuff was really almost like, I don't want to say thinking man humor, but it's like highbrow humor.
It's highbrow, lowbrow.
Yeah, exactly. It's made to be dumb, but it's kind of highbrow, and you're like, okay.
That's like Monty Python. It was highbrow, lowbrow. They're going to appeal to everybody. They appeal to highbrows, and they appeal to lowbrows. They got the...
No one feels ashamed
cutting,
watching it.
Cutting edge humor and, you know, slapstick.
Yep. You go to see Carrot Top or Dice Man, that's lowbrow. You feel kind of dirty as you leave. But
with Dice, it's perfect lowbrow. Carrot Top has his moments.
Yeah, I know.
Prop comedians, whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean? But yeah, this is... I think it's worth checking out. You know, it's on YouTube. Get it while it's there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I did always feel... this might sound dumb. I always felt kind of ashamed that I never did see this. Because if you're doing something that people are like... Oh, you're doing that. And I have no concept what that is. That's kind of me not doing my homework.
Well, see,
when I was doing that show, I was like,
there's closure now.
Now there's closure.
I brought closure to you.
We were doing the same thing, but we were doing it worse and more angry, I guess, or more dirty, or
more slapstick, more dirty, more angry,
crude is the word.
Crude, vulgar.
We were lowbrow.
Beyond lowbrow, which is a good thing.
We were low and brow.
You were like ACD. ACDC, I should say. ACDC of dubbing shows. But it's a good thing. People liked it. People liked your dub 420.
Yeah, I think we had a pretty good, decent following. And I thought this movie was, from a different point of view, I liked it. I didn't think it was funny, but I did laugh sometimes. And like you said, hey, you should watch it just because it is such an oddity, a one-off of a different time, you know.
And beautiful women in this movie. Yeah. Oh, my God. And you just watch it for that.
That's a cool movie. I do want to find that movie now. I'll try to find it.
I'll try to find it.
I tried to find it on YouTube, and it wasn't
out
there.
I'm sure Amazon, if you go to Amazon, type in What's Up Tiger Lily on DVD, somebody has
I do have a Best Buy gift card. Maybe I should go see if I can find anything.
Yeah. There you go. Best Buy just goes to a database and gets anything.
Exactly. You know? All right, that's it for this week. My name's Mal. With me, as always,
Dr. Morbius.
And we'll be back next week with more Asian cult cinema here on Radio St. Pete.